Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, June 3rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. The tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've used to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, print it off, download it, copy it as often as you'd like and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also download the worksheet, the app from the App Store, typing in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done with typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it has, for us, improved the quality of our lives and will probably improve the quality of your life. And it tends to promote comments and questions and testimonials and answers. If you have any of those you'd like to share with us, please call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone, or send us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. If we receive a comment, a question, an answer, or a testimonial through the email, we'll address it when we have time on the internet show, and then as time allows, we'll send you an email letting you know what day and time that comment, question, or testimonial was addressed so you can go check it out in the archives. We also have archives of this show available at mindshiftersacademy.org. Ever since January 10th of this year, we've been doing The Way of Mastery with commentary, and there's a separate page on mindshiftersacademy.org website to hear the first 12 lessons of Way of Mastery read straight through. And there's another page with almost all of the shows we've done since January 10th. There have been one or two that weren't really related to Mind Shifters or to the Way of Mastery, so they weren't included. And there's also a page with five or six different files as highlights from the shows that have happened since January 10th. So different ways to get involved and catch up if you want to, or go back and review some of the work we've done around the first 12 lessons in the Way of Mastery. And the first 12 lessons in the Way of Mastery are also titled The Way of the Heart. And as we were talking about yesterday, before we started entertaining questions from Susan, we're talking about how Lesson 12, the biggest part of Lesson 12, as it landed for me, was the admonition to go back and do whatever it takes to dig a little deeper, to soften and allow the pearls of grace and wisdom from the first 12 lessons to get into me a little bit deeper, for me to have a little bit more time to practice the exercises of, whether it's an exercise about observing how I'm the one creating my own life experience, or an exercise about understanding how I really don't know what anything is or is for, and how when I believe I know something, in that moment, I turn off the possibility for learning. And one of the strongest parts of the pattern that we've been conditioned to in the Western culture is that when we have a negative emotional state, as odd as it might seem, this is how backwards our cultural and family conditioning is, that when we have a negative emotional state, that's when we think most strongly that we're right and someone else or something else is wrong. Rather than having my negative emotional state or my internal physical tension or pain be an alarm system to let me know there's something wrong inside me. There's something in error about my thought process or the perceptual process that I've initiated. Rather than that, for the most part, I'm sure there are some exceptions someplace, but for the most part, in the Western culture, we've been conditioned to believe that the more angry we are, the more strongly we're convinced that we're right and the world around us is wrong. And as Guy Finley says in one of his lessons, my anger doesn't prove I'm right. My anger only proves that I, in that moment, when I'm filled with anger or rage, all it proves is that I don't know what rightness is. And, you know, that's one of the things that comes out in Lesson 3 in this work, is that it says very clearly, every time we have a negative perception about another person, just before that happened, what we did was pretend that the first axiom, the first observation in this work, The Way of the Heart, isn't true. And the first observation says that nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you, that you experience only the effects of your own choice. And then in Lesson 3, it builds on that and says, you're creating your own experience of life, and you're creating your own your perception. So every time you have a negative judgment of someone else, it means your garbage, your errors in perception, your energy that's off the mark, that's in need of releasing from your energy system, has been used to create an image in your mind that your mind then tries to convince you is the truth about somebody outside of you. It's so backwards. And it's mind-boggling that we're living in a culture that's basically teaching us the opposite of how things work in terms of our perception, in terms of who or what creates our experience of life. And in lesson three, it talks about how every time you judge, you've moved out of alignment with what's absolutely true, what's accurate in life. Every time you judge. And there's a part of this work that says, you know, it echoes Bruce Lipton's work as a cellular biologist, where he saw that when the mind energy of the person goes into danger or warning or fight or flight, the cells in the body respond by shutting down and not taking in nutrition and not repairing worn out parts and not eliminating waste. It goes into shutdown mode. And this book says, if you understood what happens every time you judge, the very cells in the body cease to function. And if you understood what happens, you'd never judge again. And we're living in a culture that's based on judging and competition and comparison. And this work is trying to help us wake up and understand that every time we have a negative perception, right before we generate that negative perception, we tried to create a belief that someone or something outside of us was causing what we're feeling inside of us. And the term forgiveness in this work means to choose to release another person, someone, anyone or anything outside of me, from the perceptions I have been projecting upon them. So the process of forgiveness has nothing to do with the outside person. It has to do with the inside perceptions that I have been creating and then projecting into my mind's image of this other person. And my mind is trying to convince me that the image that it just made up, based on a guess, based on tiny bits of information, that my mind is trying to convince me that that image is the truth about someone or something outside of me. And when that happens, I've created a distortion. I've created an illusion and a hallucination. And then my mind is trying to convince me that that's the truth of life. So every time I apply the process of forgiveness, which is basically a process of going inside myself and dismantling whatever is generating negativity within me, asking to be shown something from a deeper, clearer, more connected, more integrated mind or awareness or consciousness, every time I do that, I remove some of the garbage in my consciousness. And each time I do that process, I take myself deeper and deeper into the purity of my own consciousness. And this book tries to tell us over and over again, what is the purity of your own consciousness? It is the energy of creation that's expressing, extending into form through you in this moment. That you are part of the divine mind, that you are part of the flow of creation. And that everything you do with your mind and your thought process that leads you feeling that you can step back from another person or another thing or an interaction with people is a hallucination, because you're not separate. As Einstein said in a variety of different ways, but one of the quotes was, we are part of universe, this energy system that we call a universe. And, you know, Michael Rice's twist on that quote from Einstein is that if you think you're separate or separated from anyone or anything, you're living in an optical delusion. And Einstein said that delusion of separation is what leads us to a special affection for a few people or things closest to us. He goes on to say, that special affection becomes a prison. It creates a prison for us. And the only way to free yourself from that prison is to extend that level of appreciation or affection to everyone and all of creation. Which means I don't benefit when I judge somebody as being separate or different from me, and I don't benefit myself or the other when I pull myself back because of anger or frustration or irritation or hurt or confusion, and then let my mind build a picture of how someone or something outside of me is causing that sensation within me. There in Lesson 3 it says, forgiveness is an essential key in healing, dismantling the false perceptions our minds have created is an essential key in healing. The opposite of forgiveness is judgment. Judgment always creates separation and guilt. Judgment will evoke a sense of guilt in the one who has been judged, unless that person is perfectly awake. And if they're perfectly awake, they don't have any guilt in them to get resonated by the judgment that you're projecting upon them. But more than this, the text says at the bottom of page 25, more than this, each time that you judge anyone or anything, you've literally elicited guilt within yourself, because there's a place within you that knows the perfect unity of your brother or sister and sees quite clearly that all things within the human realm are either the extension of love or a cry for help and healing. So this is tapping into what Michael Rice derived from The Course in Miracles and wove into his codependence to interdependence worksheet, where it says, you know, list everybody that has ever offended you and what they did to offend you and what your punishment thought is for them and what your advice is to them. And most importantly of all, create a column in which you're going to write down how you're going to apply your advice to somebody else in your life. Because you're not looking at the world outside of you when you look out through your eyes. You're looking at pictures your mind is creating. And it's creating those pictures most prominently from your past experiences, from what this work would call the trivialities that have been shoved into your intellect. So when you see someone and you say, you know what that person really needs to, dot, 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 that's your mind trying to get you to wake up and see the most important thing for you to do in your life right now. And people have been shocked by this at different times. I've told them, even in my work as a therapist, as a psychologist, since I learned this work probably 25 or 30 years ago, I realized that if I give advice to anybody, it's really my unconscious trying to get me to wake up to something. So even in the middle of a therapy session, most of the time what I do is feed back to people what they just said, or teach them a tool, or make a suggestion that they might want to explore or try on for themselves. None of that is giving advice. But when I hear myself say, you really need to, dot, dot, dot. On my good days, when I'm awake, I have a part of my mind that says, oh, Tim, where do you need to do this, this, or this? One of the last times it happened was, I don't know, it might have been 9 or 10 years ago, and I heard myself say to somebody, you really need to carve out more time to have quality time, one-on-one time with the primary relationships in your life. And when I heard myself say that to this patient, I instantly started asking myself, okay, Tim, where do you need to spend more time? Is it with your mother? Is it with one of your sisters? Is it with your brother? Is it with your sons? So if it's coming out of my mouth in terms of advice to anyone or anything else, the very best use of my awareness in that moment is to say, this is my unconscious trying to tell me I'm off the mark, and one of the best ways to get back on course is to follow the advice I'm giving somebody else. Now, as I said, many times I say to people, I can honestly say, because most of the times when I'm, these days I've been at this therapy thing for so long, most of the times when I'm in a therapy session, I'm tuned into what is going on with this other person. So it may be very good advice for the other person, but if it comes out of my mouth in terms of a you really need to or you should do this or that, it's also the perfect advice for me. And it's also woven into one of the 10 bottom line observations that I have that says, I will never be upset about anything that anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar things. And that comes right out of the way of mastery, where here at the bottom of page 25 it says, more than this, each time you judge anything or anyone, you have literally elicited guilt within yourself. Another way that my mind makes sense of that is to say, when I judge another person or another thing, it's because I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. I have guilt about having done that. I have remorse for having done that. I have negative judgment against myself for having done that or something similar. And that's one of the more potent and powerful and effective bottom line observations. And the 10 bottom line observations, again, I should say they're available on mindshiftersacademy.org website under the educational materials tab. I encourage people to use them as a tool, just 10 statements, and observe them for yourself. Because if you can observe in your own life that this is the way things work for you, then some of the things I've learned to help me deal with these rather unpleasant observations might be useful to you. And one of the more potent ones on that list, and there are, every one of them has earned their way onto that list, but one of the ones that's more potent is, anytime I feel upset, and I think I'm upset about anyone or anything outside of me, it's because I'm still judging myself for doing the same or similar thing. And it might have been decades in the past that I did this thing and I'm still harboring these negative judgments against myself. But since the negative judgments against myself are the things that are generating my negative judgment against this other person in this moment, the only way to undo that negative judgment that I'm experiencing now is to go back and figure out what is it that I'm holding and harboring as a negative judgment against myself, and find a way to move into compassion around that, to release that, to give up the value I'm placing on that, and to learn to value only loving thoughts toward myself and others, which is another key part of these first 12 lessons. Teach only love in each moment. How do I do that? In lesson 10, it says, the way you do that is you decide to share only loving thoughts. How do you teach only love? You learn to value only loving thoughts, and you learn to only share loving thoughts. You recognize other thoughts as they come through your mind, and you watch them with playfulness and childlike innocence and curiosity, and you don't grab a hold of them and elevate them to a level of prominence in your mind. You don't chew on them and worry about them. You just step back and say, wow, this is a kind of a judgmental thought, or this is a violent thought, or this is a hateful thought, or this is a very grief-filled thought. I wonder what's generating that. And I step back and I question from the perspective of understanding that I am not the body, I am not my thoughts about myself, and that the way that's being proposed here in the way of the heart is easy and without effort. And the only way that I can make it be more easy is to just lighten up to understand that I am not my thoughts, and that the essence of who and what I am is consciousness, and that that essence can't be hurt by anything being taken from me of any value, and can't be improved by anything of value being added unto me. You are whole and complete as you are. You remain as the Creator created you to be, and everything about these first 12 lessons is designed to help us come at those observations from slightly different angles over and over and over again. You know, there's one of the biggest things that another of the biggest things in the first 12 lessons is the shadow of fear. It's a story on page 87 in lesson 7. And the shadow of fear talks about how anytime we resist healing or we struggle to learn to speak our truth, we can rest assured that something has occurred just prior to that. And just prior to that, what happened? We decided to believe that the shadow of a little tiny blade of grass in some mountain forest that was temporarily cast by a little bit of wind is all-powerful. And if I heal, if I grow, if I change in the way that would let the Christ mind live in me, that little tiny shadow in the blade of grass that cast it would come up and punish me and crush me. This is, you know, how many times in the, Michael Rice talks about in the scriptures, how many times that Yeshua is quoted as saying, fear not, fear not, fear not, talks about fear as a demon to be cast out. This is the same message in this book. Fear is false. Fear is a byproduct in our mind of the dream of separation. It's a byproduct of buying into the illusion and the hallucination that you are just your body, or that you are just your thoughts about yourself, or that you are what other people think about you. And in Lesson 7, it talks about this little story about a little blade of grass in a high mountain valley that just temporarily got tossed by a little wind and cast a tiny little shadow on a rock not too far from the blade of grass. And that shadow on that little rock from that blade of grass has absolutely nothing to do with any of the functioning in the universe. It has nothing to do with your life, your connection to your Creator. Nothing about the turning of the planets, creation of new suns. And certainly no effect on how deeply your Creator is connected to you and funnels the loving energy of creation through you. It's never changed by your fear or your thoughts about yourself. Only your ability to experience it is ever impacted by your fear or your thoughts about yourself. But that flow of the creative force through you that some would call love, your connection to your creative force and power remains intact, whole, always on, all the time. You were given this dominion over where you point your mind energy, and so you can create your experience of life in each moment. So you can create the hallucination of being separated. You can create the belief that this fear is a real thing and you need to do what it tells you to do. But it is never true that your fear separates you from the creative power that gave rise to you. But the fear that you create in your mind seems to be able to construct barriers to you feeling the truth of your life and your connection to your source. But when you understand this, it says, then you will never again fear fear. It doesn't mean you won't have fear. It just means you will never again allow that energy of fear to master you and direct the course of your life. You'll learn to identify the fear and the earliest warning signs of fear and take a breath and step back and ask from a position of the creator within you, how am I creating this negative emotion? And understand that the emotion is not there to be the driver for your next behavior. The emotion is there as an alarm system to wake you up to the fact that something is off in your intellectual process and in your perceptual process. And if you take a breath and step back into the witness mode, into the observer mode, into the mode of using your intellect for the sole purpose of identifying where the intellect is off the mark, now you can breathe and soften and ask to be shown, and something outside your intellectual mind can be your guide. And that's what's talked about so much in the first 12 lessons. It says right there in page 5, listen, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. Your intellect was designed to be a very humble and a very simple servant. It's a tool that's there to be used when it's useful and put aside when another tool is better suited to the task at hand. And the better tool for the task at hand in the way of the heart is what they call the awakened heart. It might be called, you know, living from the seat of your soul. It might be called living in observer mode. It might be called living with present moment mindfulness, you know, living in the moment, as the moment, letting the truth of life act through you in the moment. All these different phrases people have for what the way of the heart actually is. It is not thinking that you're right. It's learning to live from an experience, from a feeling level that you've not been trained into. As a matter of fact, most of us in the Western world have been trained out of. So, again, as we finished reading Lesson 12 for, I don't know, wasn't that our first time through? Maybe it was our second. Our first time through, maybe the second time through. It calls us to be mindful, open, soft, gentle as we go back through the first 12 lessons and understand all of the different ways that the way of the heart has been designed to help us bypass the cognitive or thinking mind and to help us strike at the roots of the fear that abide in the depth of the mind, in a place that we call the unconscious. Everything about these first 12 lessons is designed to help us see the false nature of our fears and to get into an experience of our life and our breath and our inner wisdom and our connection to a higher wisdom that can guide us, that will not be driven by our simple intellect. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can entertain comments, questions, highlights that you've had in the first 12 lessons if you've been following us along, or questions if you're just tuning in and you don't know what this is all about. Every question is valuable. Every comment is valuable. What's on your mind on this Friday? We've got about 25 minutes left before the end of our first hour, before Michael and Jeannie come on. Whether you're on the phone queue or in the chat room, give us a call. Press 1 or type your comments or questions in the chat room. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Yes, Celinda.
Welcome, Celinda.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, and you?
Very well. Thank you. It's a beautiful day, and I'm going to go to the garden, so it's all good. I would like to share with you in light of my conversation with you last week, that the clarity is becoming more and more of what my most basic issues are. And I did a worksheet this morning. To start it out with, I'd like to share a mind shifter that Michael gave me, and which I never did, because I have been feeling that things need to just rest and settle, as you gave me the permission to be gentle with myself. And the mind shifter was, it's safe and healing for me to be fully aware of my hostility, to dive into it, to witness it, and feel the original blame and shame, the root of my rage that it contains. And I just let that set, and I even forgot all about it, and then I ran across it the other day. And then yesterday morning, I had the most interesting, fascinating, hateful experience. And I did a little fast form, one of Magda's fast forms, which keeps me out of the test anxiety mode and out of the too much of intellectualization. And I would like to share that with you, if I may.
Okay.
Okay, the fast form by Magdalena Preston is, number one is, I feel, first of all, they ask for the joy level. Well, I have lived most of my life in a total absence of joy and peace, so I focused on the peace level because I don't even know where joy is as a constant. Number one says, I feel hateful towards myself and was triggered by me. And then I initialed it. How I see it, my reality. I was transferring a tablespoon of flax seeds to my seed grinder, and my hand started to violently shake. I don't know if I mentioned that to you, but I have a difficult trembling arm and hand, especially if I get into an anxiety state or a stress state like hunger or something like that. My hand started to violently shake, no control in it, and I bumped the grinder over and spilled flax seeds all over the countertop and stove, causing, quote unquote, causing me to have a 2-year-old temper tantrum, literally throwing things, yelling for about 30 seconds. And the thought I used to, since it happened yesterday, the thought I used to cause my feeling about how I see it was, I hate this shaking hand and arm. I hate myself for being anything less than perfect. I am worthless, useless, and undeserving of love and nurture and support. And then I had to take a big breath. And how I want
always a
it,
good thing.
My boss, pardon? Oh, okay, good.
Always a good thing to do.
Right. And that's, I'm in lockdown breath most of the time. So for me to even be aware of what I'm doing with my breath, which is usually being held, is a major practical challenge for me. Number four is how I want it, which is my positively stated goal, what I want from my trigger. I want to be perfect right now and always, so I can feel accepted, loved, connected, and safe, and allowed to be good enough just as I am and free to be me. Okay, that's my positive goal. I pause, breathe, and reconnect to the love that I am. I check that. And Magda put it from one of the older worksheets, apparently. I bring awareness of my true essence and being forward, being, capital B, being forward as I complete this worksheet. I'm going to take a big breath. And then number six, holding my love filters, and I wrote in Rachma and Kuba, conscious, active, and present, underlined, I underlined it, I now willingly, now you'll have to be patient with me, dismantle, unbind, dissolve, erase, release, remove, and cancel how I want it. And I crossed out, I read and crossed out each word of the goal in number four, which makes it simple. I like that. I just go back and cross it out with a red pencil. And number seven, as I breathe and ask Rucha de Kucha to show me what I need to know about this issue. So I paused and I quietly received. And this was what I have come to see. I can surrender to love and life or submit to the false ego self and death. That's at the crossroads where I am. And this happened to me once before, Dr. Tim, when we were crossing the ocean in our 30-foot sailboat. When I was so frightened that I was beginning to have physical breakdown symptoms, like kidney problems. And this little voice said the same thing. Choose life or death. And I did. And guess what? We got across the ocean. I chose life. So this is, that was a metaphor that I didn't see until right now. These are tears, by the way, of gratitude, in case you were wondering. I am grateful and ask Source, which is a Christ mind, the sacred breath, to help me form a loving goal that I offer to my trigger and myself. Okay, and this is the goal. I now willingly commit to the affirmations that I wrote above and below this form. One was, I lovingly, as the love that I am, forgive and release all of the past. I choose to be 100% responsible and to fill my world and form my body with love, peace, and joy. I love, accept, and allow myself to be as I am in this now moment of time. And then the other one is, I take in life in perfect balance order. Just one second. I take in life in perfect balance order and peace and harmony, in perfect balance order and harmony. I freely take in divine ideas that are filled with the breath and intelligence of life. This is a new moment. I just wanted to share that with you. My joy level when I started, as I remember the feeling that went through my whole body, was zero during my tantrum. And my peace level, or my peace and joy level, and my peace level is now open. Is a six and open to more. And number, the last statement is, I now feel the possibility and ability to practice my way into knowing and experiencing these truths in myself and in my world.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's just like before. It didn't matter how much capacity I had. I just couldn't even consider the possibility of it. It was too important to be safe as I perceived what would make me safe. And shutting down.
Well, and so when you remembered this time of being on a boat, a 30-foot boat in the ocean, what's the connection between that and the flax seeds or the rage you were generating around the flax seeds? Were you able to make any connection of how it was similar?
Oh, just when I was doing the worksheet, you mean? I mean, right now.
Yeah.
When
you had the connection, did you see, oh, here I was on the boat and I was blaming myself for, you know, spilling flax seeds and that's why the sailing wasn't going so well or we were in danger or I forgot to tie down something and it flew off the boat and now we were in danger because of my faux pas or whatever. Did you see a connection between this dramatic event of spilling flax seeds because arm shake?
Well, the across the ocean in the 30-foot sailboat happened, okay? It happened. It was real.
And at that time, when you were so scared, were you blaming yourself for being in this fearful situation because of some deficit on your part or lack of judgment on your part?
No, it was raw fear, survival fear.
Yes, I get that. I get the survival fear.
I'm just trying to help you sort out
whether or not there's some level of your intellectual processing that blamed you for being in the situation that was so dangerous out there in the boat.
I hear what you're saying. Possibly on some unconscious level there was, because I didn't want to go across the ocean. But I had just gotten married, and Larry did, and I wasn't going to leave him and have him sail the boat by himself. There was no way. It was a commitment. But it was a commitment that at that time, who I was at that time, now we're in a very different place. I feel in a very different place. And at that time, it was really all about me. I didn't want to lose this relationship because I'd lost so many. Mm-hmm. But that's not totally true either, Dr. Tim, because I really love a lot Larry. So, you know, it's a bag. It's a mixed bag. It was a mixed bag. And I'm glad I did after the fact, you know, looking back. And we made it. And so grateful for Larry and his expertise, because we went through four major storms. So it was not a sail in the pond, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
it was and I knew nothing about sailing. So there you go. That was a true surrender, by the way. I knew nothing about sailing. Zero. Yeah. And our equipment went out. And so Larry's skill as a sailor got us to, at that, the divine protection got us to. There were a couple of incidents where we could have been cut in half by a towing cable, you know, one of these giant barges that they tow across the ocean, and it's a regular metal hawser, not just a little rope that's towing that barge, and the ship saw us and stopped, and we didn't see it. We didn't see what was happening, but the ship stopped, and that steel hawser, you know, went down into the water, and we sailed right over the top. Yeah, that was just one incident. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're glad you made it. We're glad you're able to use a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet, because when you're in a situation like that, that's actually life and death, you can have this whole experience of getting flooded with your endorphins and norepinephrine and epinephrine and all the adrenaline and all of that. And yet, in the moment when it's happening, you won't have thoughts that generate the fear. You'll just have the physiological response, which prepares you to take an action, which if you don't get stuck in your thoughts, the action can be driven by your direct observation of what's going on in the world, and it'll turn out for the best one way or another. After the fact, we can generate all kinds of emotions, relief, negativity, judgment, bitterness, fear, etc., after the fact. And that's what the worksheet process is about, to help us identify, uncover, and release those energies that we've downloaded from past experience and judgments about ourselves, negative judgments about others, which, as we talked about already in today's show, is always about an echo of a negative judgment against myself for doing the same or similar thing that my mind is trying to tell me I think I'm upset with this person for. And that's never going to be the case. I'm only, always, and forever going to be upset because of a negative judgment against myself. We see the world as we see ourselves. And as we see ourselves, that's how we look at the world. And that's another lesson that came up in the first 12 lessons. It's another observation we can make to get ourselves freed from the prison of thoughts, which no matter how hard we think, we'll never get free of. But we can step back and observe them without judging them, and we can start to see the patterns and how unproductive they are, which is why in Dr. Michael Rice's 7-step worksheet, he has that term that was coined by David Bohm, the physicist, and that term is called sustained incoherence. And sustained incoherence refers to what I was just talking about, building a problem in my mind and then thinking, oh, I better think some thoughts to get rid of it. But the problem was built in my mind with thoughts, and there's a fundamental flaw in the process of thought. And the more I pour my mind energy into thoughts about thoughts about thoughts, the more I build a prison of thoughts. And I will never think my way out of a prison of thoughts. But I can do what you did in a situation like this and pick up a worksheet and step into a process where I ask to be shown, what's another way to look at this? What's a different perspective outside of what my conscious logical mind has generated here? How can I step into a level of openness, connection to the flow of life, creativity, that can show me something that my conscious logical mind can't show me? And the more I'm willing to do that, the more I dismantle the prison. The more I value being taught by the moment and by life and by love in each moment, the more I withdraw the value that I used to place on the thoughts that led to anger and fear and sadness and negative judgment. And that's what we're being called to over and over and over again in these first 12 lessons.
Remember in Michael Rice's book, Why, again, why is this happening to me again, where he had the little stick figures of the man who was raging and his hidden unconscious part was fear, and the woman who was fear-based and her hidden unconscious part was rage. Well, I happen to feel, this is only my perception and it could be totally wrong, that both rage and fear can be used as a drug or are a drug. And in my situation, when I was going across the ocean, I'm glad you said all this because I'm making connections right and left here. I was so unconscious, Dr. Tim, that I didn't even know I had rage against people, against others, unless it came out in a form where I hated myself, but I didn't know how to stop it. You know, if in some situation where I had power over someone else, like my children or something like that. And now, when this happened yesterday, I think it has been a 30-some-year process of awakening little by little to where Michael's mind shifter for me was an opening, and I knew intuitively that I just needed to rest with it because I was efforting so hard with all the worksheets and everything. I was just, it was like I was the ultimate life test, and if I didn't get it right, I would die, sort of thing. So I just stopped. And then when I did this worksheet, it was as if life said, okay, you can see in the connection, and now what are you going to do about it? Just like on the boat, on the sailboat, when it was like, you are killing yourself physically with this fear. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to choose life or death? And this is one time when I was really thankful I had read the Bible a lot, because that it was one of my favorite passages, choose ye now, choose ye this day life or death. And I knew that if I didn't let go in some way of this survival fear and start trusting Larry and trusting the divine, that we might get to shore, but I might have kidneys that no longer functioned. And so it was a case of do or die. And now I get to see it on a much deeper level, and it's all leading to surrender and to trusting life and life's love for me, and the fact that that is what I am, until I trust myself into actually experiencing it and trust the creator. Both, you know, it's a co-creative process for me, and I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
Well, it has to, because that's what your experience is, and you want to just be honest and observe your experience more and more, and when you do, when you find something that works, keep at it. So I thank you for sharing the worksheet and your comments, and I'm glad that you're still finding value in the work. And I will mute you so that you can listen to our second hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
Same here. You're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, June the 3rd, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in, and I'll invite you to use the app if you haven't used it, and let me know if you run into anything. I'm getting ready to submit for another change, a few things that somehow got omitted in this last change, and I'd like to issue all the changes at one time. So use the app, whether it's iPhone or Android, and let me know if you see anything that needs to be fixed. Drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And let me know what you think needs to be changed or fixed or whatever. Things that I do know need to be fixed is that the rose and butterfly link for some reason isn't working. And also there's a checkbox left off of 5B that needs to be on there where you check things off that you ask Rooka to help you with. And there's a heart symbol that's been left out. And also asked if the iPhone could do a pop-up PDF the way the Android does. And right now when you tell it to save the PDF, it puts it in a file, but it doesn't pop it back up right in front of you. And so I'm asking them to look and see if they can fix that as well. So if you see anything else, please drop me a line and let me know so I can get all the changes made at the same time. And I would appreciate it. Thanks. And I'll welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We're delighted that you're here. As we move forward to the next level of this conversation on first century Aramaic forgiveness. And you can now go to your Facebook app, and there's a group called the Marriage Support Group. In order to access things on the Marriage Support Group, you have to join it, which is not a big deal. You just hit group join. And it's actually run by a gentleman that I've, we connected around this work about 15 years ago. And so yesterday he did an interview with me, and we talked about the Aramaic forgiveness process. And next Saturday, we're just working on getting the scheduling all together, but not this, not tomorrow, but a week Saturday at 2 in the afternoon, from 2 to 5 o'clock, we're going to do a live Facebook Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. So if you go to your Facebook page and join the Marriage Support Group, and they're two different, I don't know how this happens, but they're two different groups by that name. One of them has, I don't know, a few dozen people, and the other one has 24,000 people. So the one with 24,000 people is run by Tim Kellis. So you'll be able to tap in live, and as we get the links and all together, we'll share those with you. But you'll be able to tap in live from 2 to 5 o'clock next Saturday for a live, first one we've done in a while, Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. So be delighted to have you join us for that. I'm actually doing a, this afternoon at 4 o'clock, doing a, there's a physician in Florida, a plastic surgeon actually, who's going to be interviewing me on his radio show. It's not live. It's a pre-recorded interview, so we'll let you know when that happens. We're going to be talking about the healing process involved in first century Aramaic forgiveness. So you can access that interview from yesterday from the Marriage Support Group on Facebook. You'll be able to access live from 2 to 5 o'clock next week, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And as soon as we know when the interview with the physician in Florida is posted, we'll let you know, and you'll be able to join us for that as well. So lots of things happening. Next Saturday will be the second Saturday of the month. And so if you're interested in joining us for the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop, we have a one-year program that you can join. Or we have a three-year membership you can do, or you can just do a one-month deal. And that happens the second Saturday of each month at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. We do 11 o'clock as the Saturday session for the month. And then the following Tuesday at 7 o'clock, we'll do a second session. So if you're interested in participating, the cost for a single session is $150, includes both sessions, and includes two videos that introduce the still point breathing process, and also introduce the mind shifter process. We also have the ever expanding mind shifter list, which we're up now, Jeannie, I think to 9 sections of 13 mind shifters each. And so that's another process. If you're interested in doing some really intensive process work, learning the still point breathing process, you can join us for that. If you're interested in doing any of that, drop Jeannie a note, J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. And so if you want to join us for that Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, a single session of the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing is $150. If you want to do a three-session series, the cost of it goes down to $125. And if you want to register for the whole year, it drops to $900 for 12 sessions. And if you decide to do one and then you want to expand to the three or expand, we'll prorate it so that you get the discounted rate for any session that you participate in. So if you're interested in that, Ms. Jeannie, do you have a thought for us?
If they sign up for the whole year, it actually drops it to $900 instead of $1,200.
Yes. Absolutely.
And actually, so, yes, we are going to be doing it this Saturday the 11th, even though following right after that, Michael will be doing a three-hour Why workshop. So both of them are on the same Saturday.
Yes, set the date. Take the whole day and join us. Awesome. Let's say hello to our caller.
I believe it's Miss Susan, area code 610. You are on the air.
Hi, guys.
Welcome, young lady.
I do
how
have
are you?
A question. I'm fine, thank you.
Good, go for
Jeannie,
it.
How's your dad?
We went to see
him. We just
him
spent
this morning
the morning with him.
And
yeah.
Took Aria Rain with us, and he knew who she was, and he knew that yesterday was my birthday. And so he seems to be doing pretty good. They said he ate a good breakfast. We put up a transverse pole between his bed and recliner. So they gave us a hard mm-hmm. time on that, but we put it up anyway. It's supposed to where he can grab a hold of and help them get him up out of bed or into his recliner or into his wheelchair or whatever. So hopefully that will help. The therapist, I'm hoping, will show up this afternoon and adjust it however they need to do, and he'll be ready to rock and roll.
That's good. Why did they give you a hard time with it? Seems like a great idea.
It's just really funny. Yeah, it is a great idea, and we kept telling them the therapist is the one that told us to get this. And they were like, mm-hmm. oh, but it doesn't look like it's sturdy. And we're like, well, it holds 300 pounds, and Dad only weighs about 145 now. So that shouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they even made us take the rails off of his bed. They said that was restraining. And so, who knows?
They're very skittish. They're very skittish about anything, and I guess for liability's sake, they're concerned about lawsuits and such. But it's like, excuse us,
yeah.
folks. This is approved by Underwriters Laboratory. They use it in hospitals. They use it in the VA. They use it in elder
mm-hmm.
care facilities. It's just a support device that, you know, that's less wear and tear on your employees who, you know, when he needs to get up and that sort of thing, get to his wheelchair or get from his chair to his bed or vice versa. But they're just
mm-hmm.
just real skittish about everything. I guess in this litigious society, there's a fear that, well,
wow.
what happens if something goes wrong?
Yeah, you're going to sue them, they think. So, yeah. And it does happen.
Yeah.
Maybe you could sign a waiver
oh, yeah.
or something. Whoa, too bad. I'm glad, though, he's doing well. And yay for getting the thing up and functioning. That takes some pressure off.
Yeah, they actually said that he's kind of become a clown because when we were getting ready to leave
yeah.
and I asked him, did he want to go back into the dining room where everybody was gathering? And he said, yeah. So I took him up there and I said, what table do you want to sit at? I said, do you want me to put you over here? And one of the girls said, no, put him here in the middle with all the women, said he likes to socialize. So I put him over there and all of the women were like, yeah, yeah, he's funny, you know, and all this. So he's evidently cutting up with them and carrying on and being funny.
He and one of the nurses kind of do a clown routine. They kind of like to play off of each other, and so they've it almost sounds like he's become part of the entertainment committee for everybody else in
so
mental care ward. Yeah,
oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that
he's doing
he
well. He's quite comfortable.
Home.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there was a big concern, yeah. you know, back prior, one of his big fears was not being able to live at home. And he's adapted and actually, you know, seems pretty comfortable. In fact, we've said a couple of times, well, you know, Dad, if you can get up and get walking, you know, we can get you back home again. And he's kind of like, you know, like,
yeah.
No, I'm actually quite happy here. And the... everybody likes him, and the girls take care of him. You know, he likes to be
yeah.
babied. He likes to be taken care of. You know, there's one that, you know, woman that is quite cheerful and bubbly, and they like to play off of each other, and she teases him, and he teases her, and they just, you know, have great laughs together. So he is quite comfortable there and is not in that fear mode that he was, that he wouldn't be able to stay here at home. And as I say,
wow, that's
asked
so
him,
good.
You know, get walking and get home, He's like, you know, they're going to take care of me here better than you do, you know. I say I can't handle my water bottle, and they hold my water bottle, and they, you know, it's like, come on, Dad.
Jeez.
But anyway, but he's doing pretty well.
It's such a relief for you and Jeannie, so much less responsibility and worry for you guys. It's wonderful.
When he could get up and around here on his own, it was fine. It's just that, you know, he got to the point where we couldn't physically handle him. He's
right.
89, but he's built like a rock. I mean, if you feel his body, you know, he's an old farmer, and man, he is like a rock. He's just solid. Now, unfortunately, he's lost a lot of weight since he had COVID, but. You know, he's once or twice here at home, he had gone down, and it was a challenge for us to get him up, for the two of us to get him back up again. Unfortunately, he's never hurt himself when he's done that, but anyway, he's doing pretty well. Thank you for asking and being concerned about him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember Jeannie was struggling with the responsibility and worry about him. So I'm so glad, and happy birthday to you, Jeannie. I tried to say it on the radio, but I think I had been muted by then.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It was good. Yeah. We actually, Michael took me out to eat the day before my birthday, and then
we got the day
of my birthday.
Yeah, we did.
Then yesterday I went and got a manicure pedicure that lasted like 3 hours. And
oh, my God.
Then my son and his wife took us out to eat last night. And then we went to breakfast with Aria this morning after we left Dad. So we've celebrated for 3 days.
That's great.
She loves IHOP pancakes. So we went out for IHOP pancakes this morning to continue her Eternal Day celebration. And Aria and I sent her a happy Eternal Day.
And let me clarify, they are protein pancakes that they carry now. They're not just the regular white flour pancakes. They're whole grain. They're really good pancakes.
Good to see you. I'm glad you beat me to the punch, because I was going to razz you about all that. So.
And we take our own butter and our own maple syrup, because what they have there is not real butter and is not real syrup. So
I know.
We carry that in with us.
Good.
And then when we got back, I went to the garden. You know, I had their home fried type potatoes. And then when we got back, I went to the garden. I pulled off a romaine leaf. Now, this was a particularly large romaine leaf coming out of our garden. So I measured it, and it was 11 by 7 inches. And so that was my post-breakfast salad.
Is that the one you took a picture of?
No, actually, that one was 6 by 10. This one was larger yet. You know, that was about a week and a half ago. So this one was larger yet. And Arya took a little bite of it, and then I just, you know, we have really easy salads, and you just go pick one romaine leaf, and you've got a whole salad, and you don't even need dressing. It's so sweet and so flavorful. It's awesome. Actually, I'm going to go out later today and buy a head of romaine from the store, just to do a comparison side by side, because the so-called food in the grocery stores is just so pitiful, and this is just such a demonstration of it. It's crazy.
Well, I could always take a picture of some romaine I just bought and spare you the cost of buying.
There you go.
You're right. It's very pale green. You know,
well,
we don't
white,
have that.
It's
in
pale
garden.
Green. It's crazy. Yep. I mean, I used to be in the restaurant business, and I've gone through hundreds of cases of romaine. I've never seen a romaine leaf of lettuce like what comes out of the garden, and I'm realizing that is because we've been building the soil, and this stuff is grown in soil. It's not grown in dirt, which most of the food in this so-called food is grown in dirt. It's not grown in soil anymore. And there's a major make a difference. You don't, you know, if you kill the soil, you have dirt. And if you try to grow something in something that's dead, you get death out of dead. You've got to have life in soil in order to have actual life in the food. And, you know, it's just the difference of night and day. So. delighted at this stage in my life to be gardening and understanding that. It's a whole new level of understanding for me. I mean, we've always done nutrition. We've always done the fresh and raw food at Heartland in order to introduce people to real food. But I'm getting on a whole different level now that we're putting our hands in the soil, that if you actually build mm-hmm. soil, you actually get food that is loaded with nutrition. And, I mean, I've just never seen anything like it before.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great at Heartland if somehow the garden could be started, and I'm not saying you have to do it, but when we all get back together, if that ever happens, in Heartland, you have a community garden there where you're eating out of your own garden. Whoa, wouldn't that be something?
Well, we have done that. There are actually four different garden spaces. One of them is about, it has been cultivated fully. There was actually an organic gardening group in Theodosia, and there's about mm-hmm. a 9-acre space, and we gave that to them to use so that, you know, the earth was being used and fertilized and such. But we've had a support team there. We have grown some pretty awesome food there and have been working on building soil for years, but mm-hmm. it's not something that I put my hands in, you know. I mean, I was always mm-hmm. doing the other parts of Heartland.
Sure.
So I'm just, you know, kind of grokking on a whole new level the difference it makes mm-hmm. when you have actual soil and have actual nutrition in the soil rather than
mm-hmm.
dead chemicals.
Oh, yeah. We compost everything that's not, we hardly eat any meat, but we don't put anything out there that's meat. We put all everything else. And over the years, every year we dump it all in the garden and till it into the soil. So I think we probably have pretty good soil out there this year. But all it is
right.
is a bumblebee garden so far. I just I'm looking at it and thinking maybe next year. yeah, I never liked gardening. It's an awful thing to admit.
Well, you know, with meat for meat eaters, actually you can still compost meat, not in with the other stuff, but there's an organism called a black fly larvae, and it's different than your house fly, and it doesn't bother people and doesn't bite people, but you compost in the ground, and you can put anything in there, and these black fly larvae will chow it and turn it into
Where
soil.
Where do you get that?
So, actually, you can order it on Amazon. The last time we got some, we ordered them on Amazon. Black fly larvae.
Oh,
but
Amazon.
I imagine any garden store.
They probably think we're weird. We get nematodes and black flies and worms and ladybugs and praying mantis. They kind of get worried sometimes when it says live contents or something on the box. They're not sure if it's a snake or what, but that's funny.
Speaking of which, we have a niece who was moving her husband's car for her a couple of days ago, and she's going, I forget where they were on vacation, but she's going down this narrow mountain road where there's nowhere to pull off, and he had left his window open, and all of a sudden she feels something on her leg and brushes it off and looks down. There's about a 3-foot snake on her leg trying to call up on her lap while she's driving on this mountain road. It's like, crazy time. Bless her heart.
Oh, my God.
Of course,
it
was a black snake. It wasn't,
snakes.
You know, a friendly, helpful snake, but, you know, she didn't know it, and she said she didn't give it time to teach her whether or not it was friendly.
She got it out the window or something?
Well, no, she finally, you know, she was able to, I guess, you know, scare it off, and then finally found a place to pull over, and her husband came and got it out of the car.
Oh, my God.
You know, ooh. Crazy
yeah.
time.
Oh, yeah. Whoa. Well, I have a question for you.
Yes.
My little friend Jacob, he went on a bus to New York yesterday, but the day before yesterday, I had gotten him a bus ticket
for the day before yesterday, which was load-in time at his tiny, tiny apartment in New York. We went to the bus station, which was just a parking lot. A bus comes in from somewhere else. Nobody was there.
Right.
Nobody was coming. I got nervous. He got nervous. And I was watching Power Person Dynamics with him, wondering how he was going to be. And I called the bus company, and they said, well, yeah, we have your – you missed your bus. It was 5 days ago. So here we are sitting in this, and it was my mistake. I bought these tickets, you know, online, how you do it, and I
Ouch.
Thought everything was in order. And I sat there, and I said, Jacob, I'm so sorry I blew it. And by that time, he was better. But what happened before that, when we were both in trouble, and he was frightened, he thought he had to be moving in, he became like his father. And
under stress.
My daughter
yeah.
has thought, yeah, my daughter has said to me, have you seen the demon yet? And I know what the demon is. I've seen him click into Power Person and become like his dad.
Right.
But it hasn't happened to us. Well,
yeah.
he got this look, and it was like a different person. And he said something sarcastic. And I got out of the car because it was very hot. And I said, let's just sit under the tree. And he wanted me to turn on the air conditioner. This is before we knew the bus wasn't coming. He wanted us to
right.
sit there with the car running and the air conditioner on. It was 74 degrees out. I said, Jacob, that's insane. It's bad for the planet. And he said, he clicked into his Power Person and said, well, why do you have a car then? I mean, it was just sarcastic, but I can't describe
right.
to you the
one
look
more goal.
And the sound. Yeah. Okay. So I knew enough. I'm so glad to know what Power Person is. I didn't even acknowledge it because I didn't have the wherewithal to know what to say. But I got out of the car, sat under the tree, started making phone calls. And by the time I got back in the car to tell him, I found you another bus. I've called the people up at the apartment place. You can load in tomorrow. Your program doesn't start for 5 more days. You're fine. You just come home with me, and we have one more night together. And he was okay. He was okay by then. My question
He'd
to
let
you
go.
Is, when my daughter said to me, you saw the demon, Mom, didn't you? And I said, I did. And she said, I have a friend who does exorcisms, but she is so unfiltered, such a strange woman, that I haven't wanted to do it. I haven't wanted to frighten Jacob, but I have thought he had a demon. And you and I have talked about this before, but I'm sort of bringing it up again. The idea, and I asked Dr. Tim, and Tim was very honest. He said, I don't know about that. But and we discussed all the things we do know. And basically, a demon means there's something outside of me, and I don't have any particular control. It's a separate entity, whereas your work says it's all coming from inside. But I just wanted to hear you talk about, yeah.
Well, my take, you know, if you go back and listen to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. And this applies to virtually everybody. In other words, the demon has to go. And that would be the non-human aspect of self. That would be the persona. In the Greek language, persona, the word means a mask. It's a mask we put on over who we are. And many people, and depending, you know, my offering or my take would be that what you saw happen was his stress build. Oh, my God, I'm hot. I want to be cooled off. I want some control. I want grandma to do, you know, Orb to do what I want her to do. I really want to get on that bus. I want to get going. I want to have my liberty. I want to move into my... So once stress builds, that's when alternate personalities come into play, come into action, which someone might... I mean, you watch somebody in one persona, and then when that stress level is reached, that they shift into the Power Person persona. I mean, literally, there's a physical change, there's a mental change, there's a change in everything where one could think, who, this person is possessed. But my offering would be that they're possessed by their own internal dynamics and triggered by the level of goals or the stress created by goals. You know, I don't think you'll find anywhere on the planet a really, you know, you hear lots of talk about stress. In fact, if you listen to physicians, they'll tell you that 90, 95, maybe 98% of disease is caused by stress. And I challenge you to find one person and tell you how stress is. Oh, that's a stressful situation. There's no such thing as a stressful situation. A person who has no goals in a situation sits in the situation and goes, oh, I'm in a situation. The person who has, you know, goals like Jacob had goes into different states of mind, different states of persona because of the stress created by the goals. And, you know, fortunately, he was able to let go. You know, who knows what process he went through internally in order to, you know, let go, you know, and it might have just been one goal that he let go. That's, to me, is one of the reasons why the forgiveness process is so important to engage on a daily basis, because we can have all kinds of wonderful stresses that can take us into a power person dynamic. It isn't that it's something bad or nasty. It's just that when stress reaches a certain level, and that means there are a certain number of unachieved goals active in the mind, and that's what locks somebody into that that persona, that personality. And, I mean, if we were measuring so-called body chemistry from one moment to the next, we would say this is a different human being. There's actually a piece of research that was done by a medical doctor who's a multiple personality researcher named Braun. And he did some work with a woman who was a known multiple. I mean, this was his field. Mm-hmm. And he's working with this woman who's a known multiple. And she has diabetes. And I think we might have talked about this before, but for anybody else in the audience that's listening, you know, this woman has diabetes, and they take her into the laboratory, and they're measuring her blood chemistry and blah, 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 blah. There it is, diabetes. And they induce a personality shift. And my take, and I don't know the mechanism they would use, but I would say they would do some form of behavior or do some form of questioning that would activate someone's goals and elevate their level of stress, and they'd shift into one of their alternate personalities. And literally the instant this woman would shift into that personality, if they gave her insulin, which minutes before would save her life, the insulin could kill her because there's no trace of diabetes. The whole energetic structure changes that dramatically according to the activity of mind energy in the structure. And that's why, to me, it's so important to hand people the tool of forgiveness, of simply the ability to start canceling the cause of stress within us and to allow release to take place and to allow access to happen to parts of the mind that most people never allow themselves to access. And
so
the
Michael,
thought comes, and, you know, we've had many conversations about Jacob over, you know, the last couple of years, but the thought comes, and it's the first time I've had this thought, if you'd like to text me his phone number, I'd be glad to call him and just say hello. He knows of me, and just say, gee, I hear you're off in school, and, you know, I was talking to Orb, and she was telling me about your challenge with the bus, and I just wanted to say hello and wish you the best in school, and, you know, see what conversation unfolds. So if that feels appropriate or intuitively comfortable to you, I'd be delighted to call him.
Oh, you're so good. Thank you so much. I have no idea whether that would be good or not, but I say let's go for it. I mean,
well, what
kind
of, you know, I mean, he can say, you know, what are you bothering me for, or who knows?
No, he wouldn't say that. He'd be kind and everything. He would just.
Yeah,
be,
I anticipate that he would.
I don't know what. Yeah, but anyway, wow, what a thought. Yeah, okay, I can do that. And he's actually free for a couple of days and exploring the school. And the apartment he's in is half an hour away by subway from the school, and it's the size of a closet. And he sent me pictures and said, I might have made a mistake coming here. And I said, Jacob, that's New York. That's how New York is. Teeny apartments, spend time outside, and you're going to have classmates. This is maybe the big deal of your life. And anyway, he sort of cheered up. But anyway, but I had a question about whatever you're saying. What about Jesus and the Gerasene demoniac? Jesus cast out a demon. So
Mm-hmm. You've heard me cast out demons every day on this show for years. You even had a few cast out yourself. I've even had a few on the show cast out. I remember a couple of conversations I had with, let's see, let me get my brain back there. It's like there's one young man that calls, and he resonates stuff for me. And my brain's not going there. In any event, he's brought a few things up for me that I've got to get rid of some of those things too. So all got that work to do.
Interesting. I never thought of it as the same. I just never thought of it as the same, like, duh. Yeah, I guess I've assumed that with Jesus it was a separate, different kind of thing, and you're saying it is not different.
No.
It's the same.
No. And there was, you know, a different set of beliefs and a different, I think, Yeshua, you know, the fact that he came up with this key way to forgiveness involves goals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it becomes obvious that he understood that goals created stress and caused people to go into alternate states of mind, which back then, if you saw somebody go into an alternate state of mind, oh, a demon possessing them, because yesterday they were just fine, and look at them today. I suspect he had this understanding. And I mean, to me, when I look at how people process trauma and trauma and pain in their lives, and then the shift that takes place when they understand that the thing that's driving their pain is their goals and they're in control of that. It's like the difference of night and day. And, you know, who knows it? I mean, where have you ever heard anywhere in the culture anybody say, well, you know, maybe you're under stress because you've got some excess goals. Why don't you try canceling a few goals? Like, where did you hear about it? Nowhere. And it's been around for 2,000 years. And there are 32,000 sects of people who say they're following his teaching. Where is it? Where is it? What happened? Well, again, you know, if Yeshua sat in those circles, he'd say, that's all Greek to me. Because that's what it is. It's Greek.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. That was my question, and then you did made short work of it. All right. Well,
what fun.
Yeah, and thanks for the offer to call him. I'll love to hear how he computes that. He'll be amazed because I talk about you. But it's funny, he has compartments of his mind. I said to him the other day, remember when I was telling you, you were telling me about that thing about Michael Rice that I had mentioned, that blaming people is such a dead end? And he said, what? I don't remember that. Now, what is that?
Right.
He has compartments or something. So anyway, I guess
I think a lot of people do that in order to be safe, is they shut off parts of, and you know, it's oftentimes new insights are tender. You know, Paul talked about this, and he said, you know, you don't give children meat, you give them milk. And I think he was using a metaphor for the fact that I know myself, there have been times. In fact, I've been watching a series. Jeannie and I had watched a thing presented by Bruce Lipton a week or so ago.
Oh, yeah.
And he's talking about genes and gene activation and how the gene cover, sort of a cover, needs to open in order to access and activate genes and what activate genes and such. And there's a piece in there, and we watched it once, and it's like, And for me, what he's presenting is like, I recognize the brain cells for me are still tender. So, and I said, Jeannie, would you mind if we watched that again? And she's like, okay, go ahead. And not my favorite thing to do, but okay. So we watched it again. And that was about 2 weeks ago. And I was just saying to her a couple of days ago, I need to watch that again, because I'm recognizing in my own mind, there's a construct that I'm on the edge of, but I can't quite get a hold of. And I'm getting closer, you know, the same as anybody listening to the show. We're building brain cells. And when the mm-hmm. brain cells are there, then the brain can construct something solid yeah. and fixed and real. And I'm recognizing with myself that there's a major piece of the puzzle, and I'll maybe watch that, I don't know, another time or two or 10 times before it locks in and I'm able to reconstitute that structure in my mind and that it's mine. Right now, I recognize I'm just on the edge of it. I can kind of get a sense of it, but I can't formulate it yet. I know it's important, and when I get it, I'll be sharing it on the show. At a given moment with Jacob, you know, you've been having conversations and then those brain cells are firing, so he gets an insight. But if that's not nurtured, if that's not solidified, if that's not, you know, I've had people, like, for instance, you might remember, it was probably a year or so ago, Joan from Birmingham was on the show, and yes. she shared that the first time that Jeannie and I went to speak at Unity of Birmingham, well, when we knew her, when we met her and knew her, she yeah. wasn't aware that she was aware of my work, but she'd invited us to stay at her house. And yeah. before we arrived, she was doing some cleaning up, and she found a copy of my book, which she's like, oh, I didn't even know I had a copy of his book.
Oh, yeah.
And then she opened
that.
The book,
yeah.
and she'd filled the book with notes, and she didn't have any recollection of reading it. And
that
it takes
so
staying with building the brain cells in order for the mind to be able to structure reality reliably. And if we don't reinforce yeah. it, then that capacity collapses. So I suspect that probably there was a point where out of conversations and such, he was able to go, oh, I got that. But it wasn't a strong enough structure in his mind to be able to reconstitute it at will.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Michael, what's the name of that Bruce Lipton film? Is it okay if we watch it before you're ready to get the brain cells trotted out?
Yeah, actually, it's a conference that he and, let's see, who's the other fellow? There's two of them that did a conference, and it's I'll send you a link. I'll have to find it. It was a fairly expensive workshop that he did. I happened mm-hmm. to come across and decided to buy. And, you know, so I'll find it and I'll send you a copy of it. Or I'll send you a link
Great,
to
thanks.
How to access
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah.
Cool.
One thing I said to
yeah,
Jacob after. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Later on, Jacob and I, you know, he's drinking a lot and smoking. And I went down to the basement. We have an extra fridge down there, and that's where his lair is in our basement. And I said, Jake, can I come down? I got to get some milk. And he said, sure. Well, when I went into the fridge, there were three large bottles of liquor in there. And I got the milk, and I looked at him, and I said, Jake, I'm not mad at you, but I'm worried about you. I don't want you doing this. You're drinking by yourself, which means you're not feeling well, is my interpretation. And he didn't get angry, but he came upstairs, and Tim joined me, and we had a talk about how we're giving him an allowance over the summer through this program. He has no way of earning money, and he has no money. And we said, Jake, we want to give you your allowance, but we don't want you to put it toward drink and smoking. Weed. And he said, oh, I won't. And I said, how can we believe you? Because I know you have a little money in the bank, but I doubt you're spending it, that money on this stuff. And I said, we can't really get a promise out of you. And he said, well, then don't give me the money. He got mad. Don't give me the money and I won't go to the program. And I said, don't do that. You're going to go to this program and we're going to give you the money. But just, I'm telling you.
A little bit of the vengeance of his power person playing out.
Yeah, and I said, we just love you, and we want you to be well, and we don't want to hurt you in any way. By giving you money, you may be misusing, and if you didn't have the money, you wouldn't buy the stuff maybe. So what should we do? And we talked,
at one point I said to him, Jake, do you remember what happened in the car when I found out, we found out the bus wasn't coming? He said, yeah. And I said, do you remember what you said to me? And he said, no. And I said, this is what you said. And I reiterated it. And he said, I don't remember saying that. Literally, Michael, he clicks into, he wasn't lying. I don't think he was lying. He said, I don't remember that. And so he does split or something. He becomes his dad. There's a word, cassette. He cassettes his father. Do you know that word? I learned it when I was in training as a psychotherapist. And I don't know if anybody uses it or whether I'm even using it right. But whatever.
No, I think that's appropriate. And my offering, you know, if you do some reading in the arena of multiple personality research, what they recognize is that a child, especially who goes through abuse, tends to develop mm-hmm. a persona, a personality, to handle each different kind of abuse that they have.
Wow.
Whether it's physical mm-hmm. or emotional, that they develop different personalities. And oftentimes those personalities are totally and completely disconnected. When one set of brain cells, when, you know, like that woman who's the diabetic in one persona, when, you know, things are resonating for her and she shifts personas. Now, I don't know if that's true about her in particular, but the typical thing would be that when shifting back to the old persona, there's no recollection.
Yeah.
It is a literal dividing line in the mind, a different persona, a different mask, and one mask, mm-hmm. And I imagine it's in order to protect oneself. It's a defense mechanism. People oftentimes call it a disorder, you know, much like, mm-hmm. say, for instance, when somebody goes into sympathetic dominant mode, it's sometimes looked at or called a disorder, but actually it's a wonderful protect mechanism in its proper place. And if it's misused and abused, then it becomes destructive. And mm-hmm. I've had therapists who've told me that the only thing that they have ever seen integrate fully multiple personalities is the worksheet process, is Yeshua's forgiveness process.
Wow, incredible. Oh, I would love to get Jake to do one. He's so far from it that I didn't even suggest it. I mean, he goes out of the room when he hears the radio show start.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's cool. Well, the fact that, you know, he was in the background and we talked a little bit through the radio show the other day just makes me feel comfortable just being able to just say and call, like, you know, hey, you know, I kind of met you on the radio show the other day and your orbs telling me that you're up there on your own. And I just thought I'd call and just, you know, let you know we're thinking about you and sending love in your direction. And, you know, who knows what opens or develops from there.
Wouldn't that be something? Okay, that's great. I'll send it to you. Let me do it right now while I'm thinking about it. Yeah. Thanks, Michael.
Absolutely honored and delighted.
So, share.
Anything else on your mind for today?
Yeah. No, that's it.
Cool.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to it, and I'll let you know how our conversation goes, and I'll let him know that I'm going to, you know, that I talked to you about it, and you kind of okayed it, and that I'll be chatting with you, and who knows what kind of conversation will open.
Thanks.
You know, if I think that when someone who feels like they maybe don't deserve the kind of care that they want, gets an inkling that that kind of care is out there for them, it makes a difference. And, you know, I mean, through my conversations with you, I kind of feel like I kind of connect with them in a certain way. And so I like to connect voice to voice.
That's great. Well, thanks so much. That's a tremendous gift for you to give. I know you're a busy person.
Cool. Well, who knows? Maybe I'll get the gift out of it. Maybe he'll have the next big question that I need for my process. I don't know. I'd be willing, and it wouldn't surprise me a bit if he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you look in the front of my book, there are, I don't know, 400 or 500 names there that I acknowledge, and I acknowledge 400 or 500 people because I've gotten gifts from each and every one of those people.
Wow.
The same way as I've acknowledged you so many times over the last 3 or 4 years, the appreciation for your calls and what you've opened up and the fact that you're in hot pursuit of the truth, and that, you know, each of us gains by each of us who makes a gain. So
well,
who knows? Jacob may be my next big breakthrough.
Mr. Boone. His middle name is Jacob, is Boone, B-O-O-N-E, named after Daniel Boone, I think.
After Daniel?
I mean, his, yeah, his father is a Southern family, probably Confederates and the whole deal, but Jacob Boone Moorhen. So my love name for him is Mr. Boone. Yeah.
Cool. Sweet. Well, I'll look forward to talking to
you,
and I'll let you know how it goes.
Great, Michael. Thanks so much. I'm excited about it.
All right. Take care. Lots of love and blessings.
Thanks. You too. Thanks.
All right. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 13 or 14 minutes left. Yay. So do we have anybody else up there in the phone queue with a hand up? Or?
No, it's all quiet. Somebody press one. We have time for another question. Or comments.
Yeah, and if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly rather than through the station you're listening through. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. And that reminds me of how much I appreciate the fact that we have this technology from Block Talk that, you know, here we are in Virginia, and there's this Blog Talk Radio up in New York somewhere, and then we get to talk to people in Australia or Timbuktu, and even up in the Northeast, we get to talk to people all over the world, and here we are all during that space. So it's pretty cool, pretty cool technology, definitely a vibe that goes out to all the world. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? You know, we touched into in that conversation with Susan some pretty deep principles. And I can only imagine that if Susan and I had been sitting on a stage in your hometown, wherever it is, at your local church or university or prison or what have you, that if we got walked down off the stage, you'd walk over to Susan, you'd have a question for her, you'd walk over to me and have a question, and it would be probably, Michael, I just have a quick question, or Susan, I just have a quick question. But what's your question? What if I were actually walking off the stage, or Susan were, and, you know, she's still there, so I'm sure she'd be happy to answer if you had one for her. What would be your question? How out of this conversation can we create support for you and what you're learning, what brain cells you're building? And this process of building brain cells is a delicate one. It's a powerful concept to understand that someone who doesn't have the brain cells for what's right in front of their face can't see what's right in front of their face. And when we say can't see, that means their brain cannot generate a corresponding perceptual construct, because the brain cells aren't there to do it. And when we say see, whenever I use the word see, I don't mean that you're looking out through two peepholes in your face at what's going on in the world. That is the most foolish concept of seeing that has ever existed, and most of the world believes that foolish concept, that through their eyes, they're looking at something going on out in the world. And, you know, this is, to me, is an important, I mean, it's a supremely important piece of information to understand, because when you realize that what you're shifting and changing is a construct in your mind rather than something you saw happen in the world, it makes the difference of night and day. Nobody has ever seen anything through their eyes. nobody has ever seen anything through their eyes. The eye, literally, you know, my background's in electronics with a side study in physics, and the eye is an antenna. That's all it is. And you can no more see out through your eye than you could peel the wires off the back of your TV that go to the antenna and look up through those wires and see out through the antenna on your roof and see what's happening in the neighborhood. It's foolish. It's silly. The eye is a one-way valve. Information comes into the eye in the form of light waves. Those light waves are energetic waves that cause content in the mind to be resonated. In the same way as when I say don't think about the color of your car, through resonance, certain brain cells fire. Light energy comes in through your eyes and those brain cells fire. And notice that if your car is white, when I say don't think about the color of your car, notice that your mind goes to the color of your car being white. Now, that didn't happen outside of you. That happened inside of you because that information is inside of you. Somebody who had a red car, their mind would go to what's inside of them, a red car. If somebody had a blue car, their mind would go to what's inside of them. If something shows up and you go to rage and you say, that made me mad, you went to that which made you mad. Because that mad was inside of you, not because something outside of you did that to you. And when you realize that you see, you hear, you feel with your brain and your mind, not with your eyes and with your sense of touch or smell or anything else, once you recognize that, then you realize that everything that's ever been painful to you in your life is but a construct in your mind. And when you understand that and that there's a way to collapse every construct your mind produces. You know, shy of somebody punching you in the nose, nobody can make you feel anything except what's inside of you. You know, if you'd only ever owned a blue car, the chances of, when I say don't think about the color of your car, the chances of your mind going to green or, you know, rainbow color car are slim to zero. Because that's not what's stored in brain cells. Your mind goes to what's stored in brain cells. And what's stored in brain cells that is the root or the cause of your pain is removable from your mind. There's a specific technology that was taught 2,000 years ago called forgiveness, and that's what that technology is designed for. If you're not using the technology, please go to the website, whyagain.org, and click the Start Here button up in the upper left-hand corner. It will walk you through a whole introduction and right into the whole process of forgiveness. We began an interview, as I said, on a Facebook Live channel yesterday called the Marriage Support Group. Go listen to that. It's about an hour or so, a little less than an hour. And when we posted it along with the question and answer session from Hear My Voice Book Club that Yinka's doing in England. And next Thursday at 3:30 in the afternoon, we'll be doing the next session in the book study club, so join us for that. Next Saturday afternoon from 2 to 5 o'clock, we'll be doing a live Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop on Facebook, on the marriage support group, live Facebook page. You'll be able to join us for that live. And so there are lots of ways to get support. And, you know, you can download the worksheet and do it, you know, print it off on your own printer and do it longhand. You can also go to your app store on your phone and simply type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type those words in, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And you can, through the whole process of forgiveness right there on the app, if you have questions as you do it, there's a button. You just click it, write your question, hit the send button, and send it to us. Jeannie will get that. she'll bring it up on the show. We'll answer it, and we'll send you back a link to the show saying, here's where you get to listen to the answer. And, of course, you know, the purpose of this show 5 days a week is to offer support. You know, Dr. Tim starts at noon Eastern time for an hour and gives a perspective from his work as a clinical psychologist over the last, you know, 45 years or so. And then the second hour from 1 till 2 o'clock, you get Jeannie and I. And we're here to answer every question we can possibly answer. And if we don't have an answer, we'll find it. And so, you know, consider us your own personal forgiveness support group. And questions are the lifeblood of what we're doing. We love to hear your questions, your thoughts, how you're being impacted by the work, what's working for you or what isn't. And if something isn't, then that will become the impetus for us to step forward with the inquiry on, okay, so how do we handle that? How do we energetically support the healing of whatever the dynamic is? And it doesn't matter what it is. So push one. Let's have a conversation. We've got 5 minutes, 4 minutes, maybe three. I guess it's about three. So anything for you, Miss Jeannie, before we wind down the last 3 minutes of the show?
I'll just add that there are a few things that have been added to the website just yesterday, and one of them is from the Global Book Club. We got the recordings for May the 12th and May the 26th, and so those are now on the on our website. You can go either under schedules or you can go down to events and see the online book club, and then there are links to pick up those recordings. And then also there was a frequency video that you had sent to me, and I've added that under the section of, I think I put it under inspirational links. And
this was the cymatics?
That's the one where the guy has a sand on the table and he makes noise and the sand moves into different directions.
Yeah, it's powerful. There's a whole study. You might look it up on YouTube on cymatics. And basically, you know, the whole thesis, the whole foundation of this work is cymatics in a sense. And it comes out of Einstein's saying, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. And what this particular video and the whole study of cymatics is, that frequency creates waves, creates shapes, creates structure. Your structure is different from my structure because you've never engaged in the frequencies I've engaged in. My structure is different from yours because I've never engaged in the frequencies your structure is engaged in. If I engage in frequencies that cause disorientation and disease in me, I can rid myself of that state of organized energy that we look at and say, look at that structure. I can rid myself of it by ridding myself of the frequency that creates that state of organization. You know, look at that word, organize, what turns into organic structure. And we've got a whole lot more to say than people think. And in particular, to go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he says the power of life and death is in your words. What words do you speak regularly? If you regularly speak words of destruction, then you're creating a state of decay and destruction in the organized state of your energy field, your organic structure. When you remove those frequencies, then the state of your organic structure changes. It's just, you know, it's kind of simple science. It's night follows day. And so there's lots of support. We've got about 20,000 or more pages on the website, so you can spend a lot of time going through what we've spent the last 50 years developing and then ask questions, and we're here to support you. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and we're here to support you getting it. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice,
and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.